What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. You can find me on Twitter at JakePaynting. You can find all of my written work over at Canis Hoopus. Or, as always, the show is sponsored by the SB Nation Podcast Network and a part of the Canis Hoopus podcast family. Today, we're going to be getting into a bit of draft stuff again. To join me to do so is Tyler Metcalf. He's from Hashtag Basketball, draft exporter over there. He's from Dunking with Wolves. Really, really good draft content, really good Wolves content. So I'm really excited to get into some draft stuff today. So what's going on, Tyler?
Not much. Happy to join you. Glad we can finally do this in person instead of just kind of going back and forth sporadically on Twitter. So it should be fun and looking forward to it.
Yeah, for sure. So what we're going to do is we're going to start a little series here going through each position in the draft boards. Today we'll start with the point guard, start with the first position on the court, and we're just going to go through five players that our top five point guards, which are both the same today. So and then we'll give you one kind of sleeper second round, you know, late first round, second round pick that we both like as well. And then at the end, we'll rank them what we think overall, 1 to 5, and who we think are the best fit for Minnesota. So if you want to get straight into the first guy, Tyler, and we'll just go from there.
This guy's kind of been one of my favorites, not just among the guards this season, but among all the players. Tyrese Haliburton from Iowa State. I'm just huge fan of his versatility. I know people are worried about his weird shot. I don't have those concerns. And he'll be limited shooting off the ball or off the dribble some, but I just think his overall versatility with his playmaking, his scoring, and he's one of the most efficient shooters in the country this season, and just his willingness to do a little bit of everything. He passes teammates open. He can shoot from anywhere on the court, even when defenses run him off the line. And he's effective with his floater, and he's in the 74th percentile with floaters. I know it's not the most efficient shot, but it's still a counter to when defenses overcommit to his three. And then he's just an elite off-ball defender. So just his fit in the NBA, I think he can fit anywhere or with any team just because he can play on ball, he can play off. I think he's just that great connecting piece who can do a little bit of everything.
For sure. Yeah, I really agree. I've warmed a lot on Haliburton recently. I've been watching a ton of him. I'm actually writing about him as we speak, but like you said, a really good playmaker, really good in the pick and roll. I love the way he kind of threads those pocket passes through the needle to the rolling bigs. He's not the kind of playmaker who kind of always has to dictate the show, I guess. Like the ball doesn't get sticky in his hands, especially in transition. He's really happy to hit the ball ahead early or to run quickly in transition and make those flashy no-look passes that he does in transition, which he loves. And they're actually really effective as well. So, yeah, like you said, I'm really high on his playmaking. I think that kind of leads, you know, his transition playmaking kind of leads into the fact that he's also a really good transition finisher as well himself. He ranked in the 94th percentile as a transition player, 1.39 points per possession, which is really high. Long, athletic, really fast across the court as well. He kind of seems to glide from end to end, especially after he grabs the rebound and kind of runs the floor, rips and runs. Like you said, I don't have many concerns about his shooting either. I think it's a strange looking shot.
It's really ugly.
Yeah, it kind of comes from like in front of him, and like it's almost like he uses no legs. But yeah, it goes in, and I don't think it'll stop going in a spot up, you know, variety. So I'm pretty happy with that. My only concern with him, I guess, is the burst to the rim. He doesn't seem to get to the rim at all. Like you said, he gets to that floater range, which does save face a little bit, you know, in that scenario. But I'd like to see him get all the way to the rim a little bit more, especially with his length and his size. I don't think it's impossible, but I think he just struggles to get by defenders a little bit.
Yeah, and I think some of that will improve too with how, you know, and at Iowa State, and his scoring gravity was so immense because the rest of that team was just, it was bad. Yeah. Defenses just could key in on him 100% of the time. And I see him, and I think he'll do a lot of, you know, offensive initiation in the NBA, but he's going to be playing off the ball a lot too, just because of how deadly he is off the catch and how adept he is at making that second pass or finding that cutter off the rotation. So I think he'll be able to attack closeouts a little more effectively, where he can then, you know, drop it off to the dunker spot or find the cutter or throw up a little floater. He is super skinny, which I feel has or plays quite a bit into kind of his inefficiency or inconsistencies finishing at the rim. But he is skinny, but he has these wide shoulders that suggest that he can still add a decent amount of muscle. I don't think he'll ever get, you know, ripped or huge, but just adding a bit of muscle here and there, I think will help his game a lot and isn't out of the question by any means.
For sure, for sure. Like you said before, I'm really impressed with the way he operates as a team defender. Going into the film, you know, research, I didn't think he'd be so good as a team defender. I knew he was obviously long and quite tall for a point guard, but he makes really crisp rotations. Really good as actually like a weak side, you know, shot blocker, even though he's a point guard, but he does get his hand on a lot of balls on the weak side, and then needs a little bit of work, I think, on his closeout technique, but that's something that I don't think would worry me out of, you know, his off-ball potential. I'm not huge on him as a on-ball defender. I think he still has a little bit of work to do on his technique and his positioning, you know, angles and stuff, especially in the pick and roll. But again, his recovery time and his length and his size give him a stronger foundation there than a lot of other below average, you know, pick and roll defenders, just because he can recover a lot for the mistakes that he does make.
Yeah, when he's playing that weak ball or weak side defense, and he can cover, you know, two to three guys with his just instincts and length and ability to recover, it's really impressive. But I don't love his on-ball defense. I think he's able to cover up a lot of mistakes because of his length. He does get caught on screens quite a bit, and his high hips are kind of similar to what we see with like Obi Toppin. You know, he struggles to really sink down in that defensive stance.
And that should improve
100%.
And that should improve a little bit. Yeah, as he kind of fills out a little bit, like you said, like he does have a bit of room for growth. You'd hope he can at least fight through screens a little bit better. I'm not sure how much better he'll ever get with those hips, but I guess if he fills out and gets a little bit stronger and add that to his, you know, physical makeup with the ability to recover, then he kind of might end up as more of a neutral than a negative.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I don't think, and there are inconsistencies with his on ball defense, but I don't think he's going to be, you know, not necessarily a negative. And his length, even when he does get beat or hung up on a screen, his length allows him to make up for a lot of those mistakes, where he can, you know, reach in or deflect a pass or just switch momentarily onto the roller.
And he's just a very cerebral player as well, which always helps. You know, like he's one of them guys that you can just tell kind of knows the game of basketball. You can see it obviously in his playmaking ability, the way he reads the floor and reads how sets are playing out. But then also as an off-ball defender, you can see that he kind of does that in the opposite way, where he can sniff out sets from the opposition and kind of read where players are going to be all the time. So that I think being a really smart player is such an underrated skill these days, because really smart players don't often, you know, bottom out.
Right. There's at least a higher floor for smarter players than players who just don't get the game at all.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll move on to the next one. We may as well go straight into Killian Hayes, who I've spoken about a lot on this podcast. Obviously, he's one of the top point guards in the class. I'm a really big fan of Hayes. I think great pick and roll player, both as a passer and a pull up shooter. He creates space for himself really well with those step backs and those kind of sidestep dribbles. Really great at hitting the corner with a skip pass. Really great at hitting the roller. looks defenders off really well, which is one of the main things that I find myself kind of gravitating towards with him. I think the way he uses his body and his eyes to get people open, to kind of feint to pass to one person and then pass to the roller instead. That's one of my favorite parts of his games. I think that's a really good way to kind of spring guys open in the pick and roll. Very patient as a passer. He does turn the ball over a little bit too much. I mean, he sometimes bites off a little bit more than he can chew as a skip passer. Sometimes he's a bit wild with those one hand skips, and obviously he can only really do it on the left side of the floor, which is the big knock on Hayes, I guess, that as soon as you put him on the right side of the floor, he's not going to make those fling passes with the right hand or those one-handed bounce passes to rollers with the right hand. But on the left side of the floor, he's just a marvel to watch in pick and roll. Still, you know, I don't think gets to the rim very well. He's pretty limited in his burst as well, a little bit like Halliburton, and he doesn't really convert at a great level just because he's always trying to get back to that left hand, so that can make for a few funky looking finishes where he tries to kind of, you know, go around the defender and try and get back to his left, which is an issue, but something I'm not super, super concerned about. On the defensive end, really good as well. I really enjoyed watching Hayes defend the point of attack, defend in pick and roll, isolation defense as well, all three of those levels, and as a team defender as well. I don't think he's ever going to be this all defense type player, but I can't see him ever being a negative on defense. In fact, I think he'll be pretty much a positive for the most of his career once he gets the hang of NBA defense, and he's already played against grown men for a few years now, so I'm really high on Hayes. I truly wouldn't be unhappy with anyone who has Hayes number one on their board overall, but yeah, probably my favorite point guard.
Yeah, so as far as, you know, let's say as far back as like January, I was a lot lower on Hayes than most people. I saw him coming through as, you know, top five on a lot of people's boards, and I didn't really get it. I had a lot of concerns with his inability to use his right. I didn't really trust his shooting. I thought his defensive effort and kind of awareness was just all over the place. But then just as, you know, their games progressed, and he showed immense amounts of improvement across the board. And he's still really uncomfortable with his right, but with how talented he is with his left, and I at least expect him to learn how to dribble out of a double team or something when he goes to his right. So, and it might be a while until he's like a really quality finisher with his right, but that concern is kind of, you know, it is what it is. And someone with the ball in their hand that much, I find it hard to believe that he won't at least become comfortable with it. His shooting, I'm still not, you know, it's fine, but his ability to create space off the dribble is super impressive, and his step back is one of the most comfortable and smooth step backs in this draft, I think. And he's pretty comfortable going either direction with it, which is just really encouraging for his scoring upside. And you touched on his passing, but you know, they're, you know, maybe Halliburton and Ball are the only, you know, better live dribble passers than Hayes. And when it's on his left, I'm not sure either of them are better. He can do whatever he wants with that. And his point of attack defense has improved immensely. You can just tell that he's learning how to navigate a pick and roll so much better than he was, you know, 10 months ago. I kind of view him is like the inverse of Halliburton defensively, where Hayes has turned into a really good on-ball defender and then has these lapses off-ball at times still, whereas, you know, Halliburton's this elite off-ball defender and then kind of falls out of it when he's on-ball. But overall, I originally was seeing Hayes as, you know, a negative on defense, but just the way he's grasped their defensive concepts and how to navigate screens and just have that consistent effort the whole time has been really impressive. And he shot way up for me.
It's the whole game, I think, of him seems to be progressing so quickly. Like, his growth seems to be so exponential over the last year or two, which I think that's one of the main reasons I'm really high on him. I think the concerns you pointed out are definitely real. The shooting, I didn't really touch on the shooting. Obviously, he's a really good shot creator, but he still was pretty bad actually hitting the shots, like horrible pretty much on catch and shoots. He shot 24% on unguarded catch and shoots this season, so that is obviously not good enough for the next level at the moment. I don't really have a lot of concerns with the mechanics of his shot. I think he probably will become a pretty decent shooter in time, especially because he's shown, you know, the knack to be able to hit them off the dribble, and that's always, and he also has really good touch on those floaters and around the rim when he does, you know, get to the comfortable, you know, side of his left hand. So I think his indicators are pretty good to become a decent shooter, but obviously we still are yet to actually see that. But like you said, I'm not sure there's a better live dribble passer off the left hand than him. Those skip passes to the corner, I said before, he can, you know, overcook them sometimes a little bit, but he's also 18 years old, and to just be able to show that vision consistently and kind of, you know, nail passes in the corner from the other slot on the other side of the court, it is such an impressive skill for a point guard and such an important skill in the NBA, because if you can cut out the middleman when you're you know, kicking the ball around the horn, rather than, you know, making two passes to the corner, if your point guard can make one quick pass to the corner to the shooter who's open because his man is down tagging the roller, then that's how you get open threes in the NBA. And that's honestly probably the best way to get open corner threes in the NBA, which are one of the most efficient shots there are.
Yeah, and that ability to read, you know, that third and fourth defenders and their rotation and what they're doing is where, you know, the high level NBA point guards make their money. And just if you can't read them, you're extremely limited as a playmaker. And he already has that at 18, like you said. And just if when he's surrounded by, you know, corner three specialists, and it's going to be really exciting to see what happens with his playmaking numbers. And just the improvements that he's shown, you know, over the last 8 months, just really suggest to me how coachable he is. And once he receives that high level NBA coaching and that competitive atmosphere of an NBA locker room, it's really exciting to, you know, to try and picture and imagine the type of player that he can really work at becoming.
Yeah, I think his flaws are definitely outweighed by his positives, and I think it doesn't take, you know, much imagination to picture those negatives becoming neutrals or slight positives, and then all of a sudden you've got a really good player on your hands.
Yeah, 100%.
So who's your next guy?
All right. So I'm assuming most people are going to be kind of appalled that it took us this long, but we might as well touch on LaMelo Ball. I have so many mixed feelings on Ball. I think he's probably the best playmaker all around in this draft. Just incredible vision. Not a great decision maker. You know, he's, you know, high risk tolerance, but overall, I think his playmaking is going to be an immense positive, and he'll already be a top tier playmaker, I think, from day one in the NBA, especially in transition. I love his crazy transition passer. His big growth spurt over the last couple years has made him a really good rebounder too, and it just, his instincts always put him in the right position. And he's got elite touch on like those hit ahead passes. He can thread the needle on a full court bounce pass, and he's always just looking to grab and go, which is incredibly valuable, especially if you have a big man or who's willing to run the floor, or a wing who just contested a three and is leaking out. You're going to get a lot of really easy baskets with him. And then in the half court, I mean, we've all seen his highlight packages of, you know, splitting doubles and whipping behind the back passes to his role man and kicking it out to the corner shooter. He does such a good job of manipulating defenses with his eyes that it surprises you that he's still, you know, just an 18-year-old.
Yeah.
I think he's definitely the best in this class at passing his teammates open. Yeah. As far as his playmaking goes, he just kind of needs to tighten up his decision making a little bit just to kind of rein in some of the unnecessary turnovers. But his vision is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think it's like you said, he definitely makes some bad decisions. I think being such a high level floor reader, I think sometimes he bites off a little bit more than he can chew. Like, I think he just sees so much on the court that he always wants to make that home run pass. And I don't think that's a bad thing just because he's so capable of making that home run pass. Like you said, those hit ahead passes after grabbing the rebound are truly special passes. Like, you don't see players with that kind of technique and touch on passes very often. I think if, like you said, if he plays with a wing who can leak out, if it, like you see his brother right now in New Orleans with Zion kind of just using that hit ahead pass so often, and I think LaMelo will be able to do that with pretty much any, you know, semi athletic wing or big man who is willing to get out and run. I'm quite impressed with his ball handling as well. I mean, I don't think it's elite by any means, but I think it's very advanced for someone his age. He can string together dribble moves very consistently. Doesn't always create a heap of space with them. Sometimes I feel like he's kind of dribbling in one spot, but when he does create space with them, it really shows how advanced he is in that area. Can create space for his jumper pretty well. It's obviously we'll get into the jumper in a second. There's pretty major concerns with the jumper, right. But the fact that he can spring himself open for a jumper and use his ball handling to get open is always a plus for prospects his age. And I also think, again, we'll get into his defense in a second, but I think he's actually pretty good as a rotational defender. I think he does get lost at times. Sometimes he flat out just doesn't try. But I think there's definitely the makings of a pretty good team defender in there. On the ball, I'm not so sure. I mean, he just gets flatlined by screens pretty much.
It can be bad.
Pretty much every screen he faces just kind of, you know, floors him. So that's a concern. He's obviously very skinny. And I think, like Haliburton, I think he does have room to put on a few extra pounds, but I'm not sure he's ever going to be the strongest dude in the world. But yeah, I think, what do you think about his defense overall?
I think his defense is incredibly frustrating. And he has the size and the instincts and intuition to be a really good defender. And you'll see these defensive possessions where he makes an absolutely perfect rotation, you know, strips the ball and immediately throws a hit-ahead pass for an easy layup. And it's like, where the heck has that been the entire game? And then there'll be others where he's just standing at the top of the key and his man slowly rotates towards the corner and then back cuts him for a wide open dunk. And, you know, his team wasn't good. They got blown out a lot. So I don't know if that's a factor in it, but you just really hate to see that just complete lack of effort on defense. And then part of it is I'm not sure how comfortable he is yet with his size. In high school, and he's this tiny kid who would just cherry pick and, you know, shoot from wherever he wanted. And now he's, you know, 6'6" with the frame to, you know, and he could easily get above 200, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, and not have it strain his frame. So I'm hoping that once he, you know, his body continues to mature and he adds muscle and just kind of gets out of that awkward lanky phase, he gets more comfortable with his body and is willing to fight through screens more instead of just immediately dying on them. Because when he really locks in and competes, I mean, he can be a 3, you know, maybe 4 positional defender if he wants to be. But if that effort's not there, then he's going to be I think he's going to be a negative on ball defender.
I wouldn't be surprised if he even in his first season, he might be the worst defender in the NBA. I mean, I don't think that'll I don't think that'll last for his career, but I think as he kind of tries to adjust to the physicality, like you said, still growing into his body, and then, you know, the change of he was obviously versing grown men over here in Australia, but not even close to the same sort of strength or athleticism that he's going to face when he hits the NBA. And he's probably going to be targeted a lot just because, you know, Lonzo was targeted in his first year. They've kind of got that stigma about them that they're cocky, which I don't think is necessarily true, but it does. Any motivation is good motivation for NBA players, you know, when they want to go at someone. So,
yeah, it doesn't take much.
Yeah, so I think it might, he might be a really bad defender straight away, but I think, like you said, it's all about mentality with him and improving his technique and getting stronger. And if he can do that, I think he could actually evolve to maybe a net neutral. I mean, I don't think he'll ever be a positive, even though he has a lot of the tools too. I just don't think his technique will ever get to the level, you know, where it's elite by any means. But what are your thoughts? I know everyone has their thoughts on this, but what are your thoughts on the jumper?
I hate it. I think his mechanics are all over the place. It's one of the ugliest shots in this draft. But I mean, even more so than his mechanics, because we covered it with Haliburton. You can have ugly mechanics but still be a good shooter.
Yeah.
I think his shot selection is just atrocious, where he'll just early in the shot clock cross half court and immediately pull up and just clank it off the backboard. And you know, there have been interviews where he says, you know, it's like, oh, I practice these shots. It's like, well, they're really bad shots, so maybe you should stop taking them because they're not going in. So I really worry about his scoring, because his threat of playmaking and his ball handling create a decent amount of scoring space, but he's so averse to contact at the rim that he like shies away from finishing over through smaller defenders that he shouldn't have any problem with. And again, hoping that's a transition with his growth spurt and his lack of, you know, bulk or size. And I hope that improves, because he has great touch that we see it on his passes.
And those he hits those floaters that out to like 15, 17 foot, like some crazy.
Yeah, it's really impressive.
Yeah, that's a really good indicator of his touch.
Right. So I think he can be a decent shooter with his mechanics, and I'd like to see him fix up his footwork on those more than his release. And his release is, you know, from his chest and kind of ugly, but his footwork is really what I think causes him to be more off balance and just kind of lose any direction with his shot. So if he can improve that, and if he can just be a, you know, right around league average outside shooter, I think that would be incredibly valuable, because then, you know, he can attack closeouts and then, you know, create for his teammates.
Yeah. The tendency to fade away on those threes that he has no business fading away on, that really frustrates me, just because, you know, like that he'll kind of come off the screen and he'll like have a pullback on the dribble, and then he'll just shoot like a fadeaway three after he just created, you know, 2 foot of space, three, 4, 5 foot of space, and then fade away. And it's just like, you're really lowering your chances of making that shot. He's just making it harder for himself a lot of the times. And then, like you said, I think even more importantly than the shot is he's going to have to become a better and more willing finisher at the rim, just because even if he's a, you know, even at the high level, the high outcome that he does become, you know, a league average shooter, I don't think he's the kind of guy who you want shooting, you know, 7 to 10 threes a night still. And if he can't get to the rim at all, that's going to be he pretty much his only source of offense, apart from those floaters and the occasional pull-up mid-range shot, which is a shot that's, you know, dying out around the league, even though he does have really nice touch on them. It's probably not something that coaches are going to want him to be shooting, you know, 5, 6, 7 times a game. So I think, yeah, he's really big, he's really quick, and he's got quite a nice first step as well. So I think he can become a pretty decent defender at the rim. But yeah, the aversion to contact is crazy at the moment. Those strange, you know, funky looking layups that he does when you just kind of think, just go through the guy and get the basket and maybe even get yourself to the line as well, rather than trying everything in your power to go around him and ending up, you know, breaking a layup that should have been an easy one.
Yeah, and he just seems, you know, this is going to sound harsher than I intended to, but he just seems desperate to always be creating that highlight tape and yeah. that highlight play. And we see it in his passing, and it's incredible. And every now and then he'll just airmail a pass. But that'll happen when you attempt what he does. But then when he's scoring, and if he just simplifies what he's trying to do, I think he's going to become immensely more efficient and draw a ton more fouls. Because I mean, just his weird mechanics and approach to shooting, if he just simplifies it to a normal layup that, you know, 6'2" point guard who's trying to block his shot is going to hack him and he's going to go to the line for two. I'm just simplifying and just slowing down his scoring mentality. I think will, you know, improve his offensive threat by leaps and bounds.
Yeah, it's a tough line to kind of walk for him, because you don't want him to oversimplify the whole game, I guess, just because
right.
he's so creative with those passes, and it's a technique and a skill that not many 18-year-olds I've ever seen, you know, have that kind of creativity and vision as a passer. But then with his shot selection and with his aversion to contact and willingness to get to the rim, you really just want him to kind of break that down into, like, shoot good shots, get to the rim and just try and go kind of through smaller defenders rather than try and go around them or try and get that double clutch, you know, up and under layup that everyone's going to, you know, wow, like that you're going to wow everyone with, and rather just make the simple play, but still, I guess, keep that flair as a passer.
Right.
All right. So who was your next one? We'll just go straight into that.
Okay. My next one is Cole Anthony. Assessing his game and talent this year is just impossible.
Yeah.
And just with the injuries he dealt with, which are all just like weird fluke ones that took him out for extended periods of time, is nothing, you know, that's recurring or like really concerning. There's just weird stuff that kept happening to him. And then, my God, his teammates were bad.
Yeah.
That North Carolina team was one of the worst in the history of North Carolina. And I mean, just what he was required to do, I think, really put a black spot on, you know, what the type of player he is, because I think he's a more efficient scorer than he showed. I think he's a better passer than he showed, but he didn't have any teammates to pass to that could score. And, you know, if he gave up the ball, it's likely going to end up in a miss. And, you know, he's out there trying to compete. So I love the fact that he kept coming back and wanted to play with those guys and competing and trying to win. I think that shows really great work ethic, and those guys always carve out some sort of a role, you know. And he's made a lot of really tough shots, which is encouraging, but at the same time, to make a lot of really tough shots, you have to take a lot of really bad shots. So I'm hoping that a lot of that is just a symptom of just being on an atrocious team.
It's the Anthony Edwards conundrum a little bit, right. You know. Like the shot selection was bad, but whatever option, you know, happens if he gives the ball up. So
exactly.
it's hard to figure.
Yeah, and like as a team, they shot, like, if you take his 3-point attempts out of their overall team percentage, as a team they shot below 30%.
Okay.
And it was just really bad situation all around. And he had such an offensive load that he had to take on. You know, it really hurt his defense as well. And I think he's a good athlete. We see it in his rebounding and finishing at the rim, where he can hang and finish around defenders and every now and then, you know, slam it on a guy. But I just think his situation, and he had one of the worst situations this year, I think, and was one of the least beneficial from it.
Yeah, and that slashing, I was pretty impressed by his slashing ability, but like you said, it made it so much harder. The spacing in that UNC team was just the stuff of legend, like, and not in a good way. Like he would drive the lane, and you could probably, you know, pause the footage at any time that he was driving, and there'd be three or four guys standing inside the perimeter with him, like, you know, three defenders in the lane that are one step away from defending their actual guy, as well as being a rim protector, so that he got no help from his teammates and from the way the floor was spaced. I thought his shooting was really encouraging. I mean, I think he's got a really nice looking shot. He shot, it was 86th percentile in catch and shoot jumpers, 72nd percentile off the dribble. And even then, that's with those perceived, you know, bad shots, which were definitely there. The lack of spacing, the lack of kind of teammates helping him out. The defense was always focused on Cole Anthony. They knew he was the biggest threat and kind of the only guy who would beat them individually, you know, if he went off. And he still was a pretty impressive shooter, I thought. And then, yeah, a really good slasher. I find it so hard to dissect his playmaking ability, just because, like you said, it's just really bad teammates, really strange, you know, floor spacing and strange offensive sets that they ran. But I think I don't think he'll ever be, you know, a high-level facilitator, but I don't think he's the kind of guy who you can't play at point guard. I think he'll definitely be able to set the table enough for his teammates where it's manageable. And I think there's plenty of examples of players around the league, point guards around the league that survive on their scoring ability and just kind of that middle of the range playmaking ability. You know, he can average 5 or 6 assists a game, and then, you know, beat teams with his scoring or stay on the floor with his scoring punch. I think that'll be enough for him.
Yeah, and like when we talk about his playmaking, and he's miles behind, you know, Haliburton, Hayes, and Ball, and he's never going to be that type of playmaker. But he's solid at, you know, kicking out of his drives, because he's a good scorer, and he's 92nd percentile in isolation scoring. So when he attacks the rim, and, you know, that the middle of the paint, he will have some scoring gravity, and he's shown that he can make those reads to kick it out to the corner shooter or the cutter. You know, if he can get teammates to finish, you know, that's an entirely different story. But I just, when I keep watching him and envisioning him in the NBA, I really hope that he can kind of get into a similar role like Jamal Murray, where sure, he's slotted kind of as he's the quote unquote point guard, but he's really not the primary initiator. You know, he's doing off ball stuff. And you touched on his catch and shoot. He's in the 75th percentile in spot up scoring. He's got a great work rate on offense. And I think his bigger upside is kind of acting as that off ball scorer, that secondary playmaker. And if he can kind of get to a situation where the team already has an established wing or even big man who's kind of that primary playmaker, I think that would be the best case scenario for him, because I just don't think he's that cerebral playmaker that's really gonna pass his teammates open. He can make the right read and find the open guy, but he's not gonna create that open space for them. He's not gonna manipulate the defense with his eyes. I think best case scenario is if he kind of finds himself in one of those roles.
Yeah, that Jamal Murray situation, you know, comparison is a really good one for me. Like I completely agree that I don't think he has to be, you know, necessarily like a shooting guard, but if he can play as this kind of pseudo point guard, have another, even like a jumbo initiator on the floor with him, like a Jason Tatum or you know, he's not going to go this late, but like a Kawhi Leonard or Paul George or someone who can take, you know, half of the possessions as the ball handler, where he can more play off the ball, spot up as a shooter, you know, use his athleticism more in a cutting and slashing, you know, off the dribble kind of technique, you know, rather than always being the guy who has to have the ball in his hands and create for others. I think that'd be perfect for him, because he can still do that creation and he'll still be able to do it, you know, fairly well in a pinch. But you don't want Cole Anthony, I don't think, as a 30% usage player.
Yeah, and you're just going to have a really inefficient and kind of ISO heavy offense, if that's the case, with a lot of, you know, really tough shots.
Yeah, for sure. So, is it our last guy? I think it's our last guy, Tyra Lewis.
Yeah.
Obviously, the thing you always hear about Lewis is his speed and agility. That's the first thing that kind of jumps off the screen when you watch him. He's probably the fastest player in the draft, and he uses every bit of that speed, you know, to his advantage. Gets ahead of himself a little bit at times, a little bit out of control, but I guess that's to be expected from a guy who's still growing into his body and trying to harness, you know, that speed and agility and take full advantage of it. He's going to wear guys out to the bone at the next level because he's in that. I don't love these comparisons, but in terms of athleticism, that De'Aaron Fox, you know, John Wall type of speed, you know, where he just is go, go, go all the time. He knows that that's his biggest strength and he wants to use it. I think he's still a pretty iffy, you know, finisher around the rim. I think part of that is because he gets a bit faster himself at times. The other part of it is because he's 6'3", you know, 170 pounds or whatever. He definitely struggles to go through contact. I don't think he's really averse to it in the same way that LaMelo Ball is, but I think he just doesn't have the strength to actually finish, you know, over the trees and around the rim protectors and stuff. He's a really good shooter for me. Like, I don't think he'll ever be a high level shooter, but 41% on catch and shoot jumpers, which is 89th percentile, 34.6% off the dribble, which is 79th percentile. I think he'll be a really good off-ball player as well. I'd like to see him next to a jumbo initiator as well, or a Jokic type, or a big man who can run the ball through a little bit, just because I see him as a guy who can really do well as a catch-and-shoot player, attack closeouts with that speed, and kind of, you know, create advantages for himself with his strongest strengths. I guess strongest strengths is not a great saying, but yeah, I think he'll be fine on the ball as well. I kind of figure him a little bit in that same mold as Anthony. I mean, he's definitely better shot selection wise, but I think he'd be really good as a you know, pseudo point guard, off ball guy who plays on the ball a little bit as well, and really creates advantages with his speed.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds 4 times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
Yes, and I don't think there is a... So I don't think anyone in this draft benefited more from their situation than Kyra Lewis did. I'm not trying to take anything away from him. I like him a lot, but the pace and...
Well, they were frenetic.
Just the pace that Alabama played with was insane. And, yeah. And as soon as they crossed half court, they were looking to shoot. And they incredible spacing, super high pace. And that's probably skewed my perception on, you know, his teammate John Petty for me, probably some too. But having that open of a floor, I think, inflated some of Kyra's production. And he's incredible at getting to the rim. That first step is lightning quick, and he's going to be super difficult to defend, but he's really got to improve that at rim finishing. And he invites contact, which I love. I'm not sure, you know, how many calls he'll get in the NBA. But smaller guys like that, it can work out for him. But he was just in the 34th percentile with his at rim finishing this year. And and you kind of touched on it, a lot of the times his drives would be kind of, he'd drive without a plan, where he'd just kind of drive into that double team. And
a lot of jump passes, you know, where he kind of gets in the lane and then thinks, oh, I need to kick this out. And he kind of had, like you said, doesn't have a plan. And he ends up turning the ball over.
Yeah. So, and as far as his playmaking goes, I think he's kind of more in that he's a slightly better playmaker than Cole Anthony. Yeah. But I don't think he's going to be that guy that passes teammates open. But he's able to make that smart read. He's able to make the extra pass. He can, you know, find the open guy, but he's not going to manipulate the defense. He's not going to, you know, throw the ball ahead of the guy before he even cuts and, you know, lead him to the rim like that. I think his shooting numbers are a little inflated because of their offensive style. There's nothing wrong with his form. I'd be surprised if he hits that 37% mark in the NBA. But if he's in that mid-30s, when the offense makes that extra pass to him on the wing or in the corner, and if he can just knock that down, I think that's all he really needs to do. Just being like that 35% range, I think that's more than acceptable for what his role will be. And I love his off-ball defense. And he's really limited as a defender because of his size, likely be limited to just point guards. But just saying, his work rate is going to be super annoying for opponents. And he does a great job of jumping passing lanes by just baiting opponents into making sloppy passes, because he acts like he's giving them space and then just closes it so quickly.
Yeah, he's got that stereotypical kind of little guy defense where he's never going to be a real positive on defense, but he tries so hard, and you can see that he really wants to be a good defender, and
he's going
to
make you work for it.
Yeah, exactly, and that's about all you can expect from a guy who's south of 180 pounds. So if he can get into the NBA and just do that kind of really work hard, play off the ball, he jumps passing lanes really well, and when he does jump passing lanes, you know, he's at the other end of the court in a flash, so he usually can turn those live ball turnovers straight into points for himself, which is obviously beneficial. Yeah, I'm pretty high on his off-ball defense as well, just because, yeah, he works so hard. He really wants to be a good defender. I think he's definitely going to fill out a little bit as he gets older. He's so young for a sophomore. To be 18 and you've already played two full years of college basketball, I think that's really going to help him as well, you know, as he grows into the NBA, because he's going to be really young still, but a little bit more experienced than a lot of these guys. So I think that'll help him. I just think that I don't think I ever see him as maybe the really high-level player as, you know, a lot of people think he might be. But as a 25-minute a game point guard, you know, off the bench or a low end starter, I think he can definitely, you know, impact winning basketball.
Yeah, I don't think he should ever be the focal point of a rotation, but I'm bringing that speed, that energy off the bench, and that can be incredibly valuable for teams, and just adding that spark of annoyance and defense and eagerness to get out and run, and that can just really swing momentum in games. And I would be surprised if he doesn't, you know, at least carve out that role in the NBA.
Yeah, for sure. So my sleeper, we'll move on to him. I was going to go the same one as you, but once you took it, I thought we may as well go a couple different ones. So I went Cassius Winston, who I think I'm a lot higher on, maybe not a lot higher, but a fair bit higher on than the consensus. Obviously, he's a 22-year-old senior, so that takes away a little bit of his perceived value, I guess. And he's also quite small. He's 6'1", 185 pounds, so he's not going to, you know, overwhelm anyone. I guess I can start with the cons on that end. Is he going to be a pretty bad defender, I think, at the NBA level. He's always going to struggle to contain guys. He, like Lewis, I don't think he's a low effort guy, but he's smaller than Lewis in size and in wingspan. He doesn't have the technique or the size to really do anything except play the passing lanes with a high IQ. And even then, I don't think that's enough to kind of, you know, cement him as anything other than a negative on defense, that probably limits his upside pretty severely. I think he's going to be a guy that you probably have to hide off the ball, you know, especially if you want to play him as a real rotation, you know, 20 plus minute a night guy. He also has pretty limited burst. I think he struggles to get by defenders. He's really, really crafty and has really nice handles, which, and a really nice floater game, which definitely make up for some of that lack of burst. But it's always going to be a deficiency for him. He's never going to be a guy who can really put pressure on the rim. But yeah, I think outside of that, you get into the things that he does really well, and that's he's a high level shooter. He can really excel as a shooter, you know, in off the dribble situations, spot up situations. Once he gets his feet set, I'm pretty high on his shot making ability. Shot 43% on 5.2 attempts per game. He hit 50% of his 90 catch and shoot jumpers, which is 97th percentile. 42.1% of his off the dribble jumpers, which is 90th percentile. I don't see any reason why he won't be able to shoot the ball pretty well at the next level. I don't think he's ever going to be, you know, a 40% three-point shooter, but if he can get in that high 30s and show a bit of shot versatility, you know, be able to do it off the dribble or off catch and shoot, and then chime in with his passing, I think such a fun, just a fun player to watch, but it's such a fun passer. He averaged 6.5 assists per 36. He excelled in the pick and roll with Xavier Tillman. Like, those two were just such a fun pairing to watch as pick and roll players. He doesn't really try too much. He knows where his players are going to be in the pick and roll. He's a really good transition passer as well. I don't think he has that super, you know, sexy touch like LaMelo Ball and Tyrese Halliburton have, but he's always willing to get the ball, hit it up ahead. Especially if he does get in the passing lanes, he's always kind of looking for the next pass ahead. I just think he's a super smart player. He's one of them players who strikes me like a, not as good, but like similar to like a Jalen Brunson, who just will carve out a place in the league, and he's never going to be a star, but he can really impact a good team and really play well for a playoff team.
Yes, I'm as a Michigan fan, I'm ecstatic to see him finally leaving Michigan State. I can be done with him. But he's one of the smartest basketball players in this draft. And he reads the floor really well. He's just a great leader, great floor general, really good shooter, a shockingly good shot creator. And he's not a good athlete, and he's small, but he does such a good job of creating just enough space for his jumper or using change of pace dribbling to, you know, get the defender off balance in the lane and draw fouls. So he's offensively, he's done a great job of finding ways to counter his lack of size, just with, you know, those hesitations, those hang dribbles, his step back, using screens really well. And I think he will be able to play some off ball, just because he is just that really good shooter from outside. Defensively, he's just going to be targeted a lot, I think. You can scheme around it some, and he's smart enough to kind of play into his team's defensive scheme and cover up some of it. But he's just small, and he's not a good athlete. So at that end of the floor, I think he's going to be a big liability. But, you know, when you're drafting a senior point guard in the second round, I think you're okay with that, because you're bringing or you're inserting a guy into the rotation who's a good leader. He produces to winning basketball. We have, you know, four years experience of that at Michigan State. He knows how to win. He knows what to do offensively. He can run the offense. So I get the appeal with him. I have him kind of early to mid second round. Because his offense is it's impressive. He's a good shooter, and he's just incredibly smart and just a good teammate.
Yeah. That's pretty much where I'm at as well with him. I don't think there's even a chance that he becomes a star player or even maybe, you know, a 15 to 18 point guard. But I think he's definitely going to end up as a pretty good backup point guard. and someone who...
Yeah, and those guys are super valuable.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're drafting him at, you know, in the second round, the mid-second round, I know Minnesota have already interviewed him as well. So I'm guessing they're, you know, if they were to draft him, which interviews mean nothing when there's, you know, 6 months until the draft, like I'm sure they'll interview pretty much everyone. But,
right.
you know, the fact that he was one of the first on their list mean he's definitely on their radar. And, you know, that'd probably be at pick 33 if they were targeting him at all. So I'd be pretty happy with him, you know, in that region. And I think he'd definitely add stability to an offense pretty much immediately. And then if you can scheme around him at all defensively or kind of, you know, mitigate his defensive issues just by playing him as a backup against other backups, then maybe maybe you get a really good player out of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So who was your sleeper?
All right, so I'm going to go with Grant Riller from Charleston. I'm guessing very few people have actually seen him play live, but God, his highlight tape is fun. so, and he's kind of like Winston. He's not a big dude, but he's a pretty good athlete. And
definitely a better athlete than Winston.
Oh God, yeah,
yeah.
And I think he's one of the best scorers in this draft. All right, so I'm just going to read through a couple numbers here. So just hang with me. With his overall scoring and assists, he's in the 91st percentile. Overall scoring is in the 89th percentile, 97th percentile in pick and roll, 88th in isolation, 96th in spot up, 85th when shooting off the catch, 83rd when shooting off the dribble, and 92nd percentile with his runners. And he can score in at a high level in any area of the floor. And he's an older guy, but and he invites contact at the rim. He uses or he can navigate the pick and roll really well. And then his scoring gravity, you know, he can find those open shooters or cutters out of the pick and roll. So I would be shocked if he develops into like that high level starting point guard. But as a scoring guard coming off the bench, and he could insert a lot of energy and a lot of scoring immediately.
Yeah, he's so fun to watch. I mean, like, his scoring package is just probably unrivaled, you know, in college basketball this season. Like you said, he puts pressure on the rim. The way he hangs in the air on those finishes after taking the contact and then still has the touch to kind of flip up a shot and hit it and get the foul a lot of the time as well. Really impressive. Though he has that really strong and quick step back jumper. It kind of reminds me of like a Damian Lillard type step back where he really, you know, bursts off that step right into position and hits the jumper. He's not a really, really high level 3-point shooter, but for the shots that he took and the, you know, the way he can get into his shot, I think at the NBA he could be an even better, you know, 3-point shooter in terms of percentage and stuff, just because he'll get a lot more open looks as a catch and shoot guy. And it's a strange one with me for him, just because I think you want to play him off the ball a little bit, just because he has that such a great shooting technique. And I don't think he's a guy in the NBA who you really want to have the ball all the time, just because there's so many other great players on the floor. But with the ball in his hands, he just does so much to like. His first step's crazy quick. I mean, it's almost like there's not a single thing offensively, you know, as a scorer that he's not comfortable doing.
Yeah, once he beats or gets the corner on his initial defender, he's just so crafty in the lane and creating just that little amount of space or just getting into the shot blocker's body to negate their shot blocking and ability to elevate. He's just a lot of fun. I mean, it would surprise me if he becomes, you know, a high level starter, but just coming off the bench and having that threat of scoring, whether he's initiating the offense or, you know, you're making the extra pass to him and then he's attacking off the dribble. I think you could scheme up a lot of things to really make him punish defenses.
Teams that need a scoring punch. I think I wouldn't be surprised if he goes, you know, fairly high, like, you know, mid to late first round, you know, on a team that's pretty desperate for a scoring punch. Someone like Orlando or something like that, a team that really needs, that already kind of is set defensively, because he's not a good defender. And especially, no, you know, at the level that he was playing at, you'd hope, and his age as well, you'd hope that he was pretty advanced defensively, just because he's got so much more experience and obviously a lot of talent. But I think he'll be pretty much a negative, you know, from the get-go, and won't get any better as a defender. But yeah, a team like Orlando, or I can't think of another one off the top of my head that's kind of already pretty good defensively, but needs a scoring punch, is really going to love Grant Riller, because that's what he is. He's the ultimate scoring punch, you know, a guy who just comes in, who can give you, you know, 10 to 15 a night without breaking a sweat, and then have those nights that, you know, he drops 25 to 30 when he's really feeling it. I think that's the type of NBA player he'll be, and I think it's pretty valuable to a lot of teams.
Absolutely. And just defensively, he just doesn't even try, really. I'm sure once he's in the NBA, he'll exert at least some effort, or else he just won't play. But just because of the offensive load he carried, and defensively, he just didn't really bother. And his off-ball movement was pretty lackluster once the rare occasions he actually did give up the ball. When he has it in his hands, he's just a ton of fun.
Yeah. So out of all those guys, how would you rank them just overall as prospects?
All right. So I have Haliburton, Hayes, Ball, Cole Anthony, Kyra Lewis, Grant Riller, then Cassius Winston.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit lower on Haliburton than you. I mean, talking about him, you know, thinking out loud about him makes me feel a little bit better again, just because it's the first time I've actually, you know, spoke to someone for an extended period of time about Tyrese. But I'm still high on Hayes as my first, Ball as my second, Haliburton as third, Kyra Lewis fourth, and Cole fifth, Rilla, and then Winston. I could have gone either way on Lewis and Cole. I spent a lot of time kind of sitting there thinking about those two. I mean, they both, I know they're different players, but they kind of, I think they project to be pretty similar, you know, outputs in the NBA. So I'm not sure who I'd rather with that. I think if I'd rather shooting, I'd go with Cole. And if I'd rather, you know, rim pressure and the ability to play quick, then I'd go with Lewis. But I lean towards Lewis. But yeah, you could convince me either way on that.
Yeah, and at that point, I think those guys are just, it comes down to kind of team need in that range instead of best player available. And like the differentiator with like Haliburton, Hayes, and Ball, overall, I have Haliburton 3, Hayes 5, Ball 6. So I'm like, they're all right in that group for me.
Yeah.
I just see Halliburton's floor being a lot higher than those guys, even though Hayes and Ball, you know, if everything works out, they definitely have a higher ceiling than Haliburton, where they can reach, you know, that all-star level, where I'd be pretty surprised if Haliburton, you know, is that perennial all-star instead of just a really, really quality or high-end starter for a long time.
Yeah, it's tough at the top of the draft with that, because, you know, it's easy to flip-flop between high floor and high ceiling, and, you know, you're trying to find the perfect, you know, balance in the middle. I have Hayes. I'd had Hayes at one for a period, but I've cooled on him a little bit, but I still have him at two. So okay. I think he's the kind of the balance between, I think his floor is still relatively high. I still think he'll be able to do a lot, you know, even if his flaws don't work out. And I do feel the same about Haliburton as well. I just think that Hayes, when comparing them to, has a higher ceiling as well. So that's why I lean towards him.
Sure.
Ball, I think Ball clearly has the lowest floor of them all.
Yeah.
But probably the highest ceiling as well. And I know a lot of people have Ball going number one. I don't have him that high. I have him at three, I think. And then I have Haliburton probably. I flip-flopped on him as well. I think he's probably in the 5 to 8 range for me. So It's all kind of, you know, objective. But who would you rank those if you were just thinking about how they would fit on the Timberwolves? We haven't really spoke much about the Timberwolves, but if
right.
you were just going on fit for those 5, 6, 7 point guards, who would you go?
I think Halliburton's the best fit. Personally, I think he fits along Russell, Beasley, McLaughlin. I think he can play with any of those guys and kind of make up for any of their deficiencies. And Beasley and Russell aren't great defenders. I think Halliburton can cover up a lot for their on-ball defense with his off-ball, and he can be that connector. He can be that spot-up shooter during the Towns-Russell pick and roll. So I just kind of like him. I think he's that perfect linchpin that blends everything together.
Yeah.
And then I got Hayes second, Ball third, just because, and if he really is this elite playmaker, pairing him with Towns and Beasley and Russell, who can play off ball too, I think could produce a lot of really fun stuff on offense. But the defense would be real issue. Then I got Kyra Lewis at fourth, then Grant Riller, Cole Anthony, and then Cassius Winston.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty much on the same lines as you. I mean, like I said before, I really love Hayes, but I think Halliburton is probably the better fit. I think Minnesota might actually be one of Halliburton's best fits in the draft. I mean, with the ability to already have high-level shot makers, you know, in Towns and Russell and Beasley, that allows him to play more of a connecting role. He can still use that passing and use that off-ball defense, as you said, to cover up for a lot of mistakes for those guys. I think he could play off the bench. He could play, you know, as a starter. He can probably almost, you know, guard twos and threes, you know, pretty consistently. Like, obviously, we spoke about he's pretty iffy on ball defense, but he's definitely would be one of the better defenders on that team right now. And I really like Halliburton's fit for Minnesota. Second, I had Hayes as well. As you said, all those things that he does well, I think Minnesota could use. I think he could play off the ball as well, especially with his improving defense, but not quite the same fit as Halliburton. Then, I found it really hard after this. I went with Ball for the same reason as you, just because if he does have that really high potential, I don't know how you can kind of say that he's the worst fit on this team, even though the inability to shoot and the spotty defense is something that this team, you know, this team really values shooting, putting pressure on the rim, and being able to defend, even though nobody can do it right now, but they obviously need it.
Right.
So that scares me away a bit with Ball, but I think, yeah, the high level passing, the ability to unlock Towns to another level, you know, from the one he's already at, would be pretty scary. And then after that, I had Kyra Lewis, Cole Anthony, Grant Riller, Cassius Winston. Same thing. You can throw a blanket over Lewis and Cole. Either right. one of them are going to bring, you know, a scoring punch with a little bit of playmaking, you know, inconsistent defense. But I think, you know, I'd take either of those. Winston, I kind of like the idea of Winston on the Timberwolves maybe a little bit more than Riller now that I think about it, just because I like his ability to make plays in the pick and roll with Towns. Sure. And I'm not sure how much Minnesota really needs a scoring punch like Riller. Like, I mean, every team could use a Grant Riller, but
sure.
The Minnesota are pretty set when it comes to scoring, you know. So if you are going to bring in a guy who can't play defense, which is both Winston and Riller, then maybe I'd prefer Winston's kind of, you know, auxiliary skills, just the ability to create for others and to play a bit more off the ball. So, yeah, again, throw a blanket over those two. But I think the main three there are Halliburton, Hayes, Ball that we're in agreement with. I think those are the three that most fans, you know, want to see in Minnesota if they do want a point guard. And I think Halliburton probably deserves a little bit more love as a really good fit.
Yeah, and I think the big thing when kind of balancing those guys is what you think the long-term usage of D'Angelo Russell is. Is he going to be used as that primary initiator, that that, you know, true lead point guard, or do they want to use him as kind of that hybrid combo guard that plays a lot off ball? Because I mean, he is a good off ball player on offense, an off ball shooter. So if that's the case, then I think Hayes would probably edge out Halliburton, just because I think Hayes is a better probably on ball initiator than Halliburton is, where Halliburton is a lot more valuable off ball with that secondary playmaking and off ball shooting.
Yeah.
So I think that what the plan for Russell's role on the team is the biggest kind of differentiator between those guys.
Yeah, for sure. If you're planning to play Hayes off the ball, I think he can handle it defensively, but so far he hasn't shown that, like we said, that he's a good catch and shoot player. I think he'll get better, but you're really mitigating his true strengths by not letting him run pick and rolls pretty often and be the focal point of it. Not the focal right. point, but the lead ball handler of an offense, I think. But Halliburton figures to be able to impact the game as a passer and a shooter, even off the ball, because he's just so good in that linking role where he can make that third or fourth pass, get out in transition. You know, you don't have to be the lead ball handler to be the guy who grabs a rebound and runs out in transition and feeds others. And he's so good at that. I mean, he's I think we didn't really speak about it, but he's such a really good rebounder for his size.
Yeah.
And that plays into his game so well. I mean, there's been a lot of kind of Lonzo Ball comparisons just because their physical profile and you know, statistical profile in college were pretty similar. And I don't love the comparison, but when you see them sneak in, grab a rebound, you know, five dribbles and then, you know, no look pass to a guy who's flanking them, that's when you see that similarity, and that's a really good skill to have. And Minnesota would really really appreciate that skill, because they want to get out and play fast, and Russell's not the kind of guy who really plays fast. So I guess if you could pair him with Halliburton for 20, 25 minutes a game, you know, that at least speeds off your offense a little bit.
Yeah, I like that point a lot. Russell does kind of seem to take his time getting up the court. If the Timberwolves do end up with one of those top three picks, and they're looking for a guard, and at the end of the day, they got to go with just, you know, who they think, I think, is going to have the highest ceiling. I know they're looking to win now, but this team hasn't done a whole lot of winning ever. if they think that Ball's ceiling is, you know, miles ahead of those other guys, then they got to go with him. Or if they're looking to draft them to move them immediately, then, you know, they got to kind of try and read the rest of the NBA landscape on who other teams think is the most valuable there.
Yeah, for sure. That'll probably do us for today. Thanks a lot for coming on, man. I've always enjoyed.
Oh, my pleasure.
You know, your draft stuff, especially over at #basketball, they, really good dudes over there, and I was just reading through your latest mock draft again last night, and that's so much work in there. Like, that must have taken you forever.
A lot of really bad college games that fill up the DVR, and my God, college refs hate any flow of game. They're the worst, man.
I don't think I could imagine so many charges being called in the NBA. Like, any
none of them are charges.
Any block charge is just a charge. Like, they just, it's a cop out.
It's the worst. It's an absolute nightmare. But for some weird reason, I love doing it. So.
Yeah. So thanks for coming on. You can follow Tyler over. What's your Twitter name? Sorry, I should have written that. I should have wrote that down. I normally do.
No, you're good. It's tmetcalf11. So tmetcalf, and then the number 11.
Yeah, so go and follow him there, especially if you're, you know, if you're interested in the draft and through a Minnesota lens as well. As usual, thanks for listening. Rate, review, subscribe, you know, like, share, all that good stuff. And I'll see you guys next week. Thanks again, Tyler.
Thank you.